This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It was never our intention to replace Jack with one footballer. Our strategy was to analyse and break down Jack's key attributes, his creativity, his assists, his goals, and to find these qualities and others in three forward players. In signing Emiliano Buendia, Leon Bailey, and Danny Ings, we believe we have achieved this key objective. And in doing so, have also reduced an over-dependency on one brilliant footballer.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. It's a new dawn, folks. It's the new season, 2021/22. Joining me to discuss the main theme of next season, which will be improvement, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome back, gents.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Well, oh, he sneaked in there in the back. Ooh. There. Didn't think he noticed him creeping in there.
He's in the building.
Yes. I'm all right. Thank you very much. How are you, Mr. Phil, sneaking in there?
All right. Apart from still in isolation, I have another couple of days to go.
Still isolation? What is this? Some kind of competition between the two of you who can be isolated the most?
Phil's winning now. I thought I was killing it, yeah. But Phil's going for the gold here.
We're going to have to have some kind of date, and then the person who's been isolated in the most days wins a season ticket to Manchester City to isolate some more. So what have you been doing in this isolation, Phil? Enlighten us.
Well, there hasn't been much today, but I have been teaching the boy how important it is to boo opposition players. It's something you need to learn as a football fan.
Like who? We haven't played anybody, have we?
No, but just when you see them on TV, just certain popular players that used to play for us.
I think after a day or two, I mean, obviously, you got to react and people weren't happy. Is it a bit petty that you never mention his name again, or is it a bit childish? I don't know.
It's probably childish, but it's also quite funny to begin with.
Yeah, well, we'll see how we go in this podcast. What have you been up to, Bud? Anything? I saw you at the 100 crickets that we went to.
That was fireworks, wasn't it? It was great fun. Literally fireworks as well.
Flamethrowers, more to the point. But yeah, we went there. We went with open minds, but because there's a lot of scepticism amongst the cricket elite regarding the 100.
Yes. The traditionalists, as we call them.
But a lot of fun. I mean, it's more aimed at kids. Well, the presentation is, but...
Yeah, that was good.
I think it's barnstorming action. Good,
and
good
really
evening
good game
out.
As well, wasn't it? Really like entertaining game of cricket. And then went to the open training over the weekend, which was interesting to see them.
Did they get the T-shirt cannons out and fire them into the crowd?
I was hoping for a bit of T-shirt cannon. It was more just give Ashley Young the ball and let him smash it into the crowd. It was quite fun trying to see him and Dean Smith trying to get it into the upper Holt end. Ashley Young did. Funnily enough, Dean Smith's not quite the player he used to be. And then Emi Martinez tried to show off and get on into the upper tier of the Trinity, which is quite the hit for anybody who sat up there. That is a big shot and didn't.
I think this should be the way forward rather than that prize where it lies thing. I think they should just like volley bottles of Heineken into the top tiers and Gingster pies as well.
I'm glad Hamstrings Lansbury is no longer there to do that kick into the top tiers.
Right, anyway, coming up in the show, we'll be looking ahead to the new season, but in rather than just kind of previewing it in the normal way, just look at ways that, after looking at the initial concerns of the season ahead, looking at ways that Villa improve as a team. Also, we'll go through the Villa news, Media Muppet activity of the week, before going into a cross-section of football news in the 3 points, before getting on to the main part and looking at the 2021-22 season. Right, first of all, let's kick it off with the Villa news. Went gangbusters last week. Obviously, Grealish out. 100 million in the bin. Looks like that's already been spent after Christian Perslow's speech. Very much signposted that. But in this week, it looks like they, obviously with the deal with Manchester City was just make sure we, you know, give us time to announce new signings, thus to soften the blow of obviously a player that a lot of fans are emotionally linked to. So in came Leon Bailey. You could tell that was hastily arranged because it was on some random family YouTube channel.
Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it?
And Danny Ings came in. That was out of the blue, under the radar of any newspaper, ITK, old school signing. Just popped up.
I nearly dropped my phone into my dinner.
Into your pasta, I seem to remember.
Yeah, it was into my pasta. I mean, just reaching across, I'm like, oh.
But, the funny thing is, when you boil all this down, deconstruct it, it's all you need to know. Player has signed. You don't need to go through all these weeks of, are we going to sign him? What's going to happen? Just give me the facts and, that's all you need to know.
His medical will be on Thursday afternoon at 3:30 in the afternoon. I don't care.
Hold up the shirt. Bang, in we go. It's all, everything else is just mental chewing gum. It's all fugazi. It's all nonsense. Also in, and this I think is a smart signing, XL Tuanzebe returns for the third time. Manchester United have extended his contract, and one of those seasons he comes back to join his favourite club. The funny thing is he's been with United since the age of 8 years old, and he's played more league games for us than them. But we will talk about him in the context of next season. Louis Barry, interesting loan, going to the Tractor Boys Ipswich Town. Gets to wear the Ed Sheeran sponsored shirt. So that'd be good to see him playing regularly. And because that's my big concerns about him is literally the whole stature thing and how that translates, week in, week out. Can he cut it in the men's game, so to speak? Speaking of Grealish, the club, if you are not aware and you have already bought a Grealish shirt, there is like a shirt armistice where you can hand it in and exchange it for another shirt. Meanwhile, on the pitch, crazy situation. I mean, Villa have just gone through this whole Grealish saga and the whole games they have to play behind the scenes there. And then suddenly you have your friendly cancelled against Sevilla because of the COVID. They had a COVID situation and literally zero notice to arrange another fixture. So they did the open training, which I thought they would do, and managed to find Salernitana to come in from Italy to play on Sunday. Obviously, the police, you need notice period to turn that one round in terms of closing roads, etc. So it was very unlikely there would be ever going to be a crowd in at such late notice. But Villa went on to win that 3-1. Oh, a decent game, I thought.
It was entertaining, actually.
Good opposition as well. I thought it was the sort of almost lower Premier League standard opposition, so it was pretty good.
Yeah. And got feisty, didn't it, later on as well?
Yeah, no, which is good. I mean, the big chap having a little altercation with House, he's probably glad it's not Wesley because he would have been butted.
That'd have been a good fight, that.
Yeah, it would, actually. I don't know who my money would be on there, but it would have been interesting. Right, it's time for a little bit of this. Right, Mr. Phil Shaw, what is in the Media Muppets trough?
Well, this week there's been a bit of discourse around Ollie Watkins. Now, this all started with the Express's Alex Turk saying, he started it off with Danny Ings. He goes, despite Danny Ings being a bit of a disappointment at Liverpool, he could help them land a deal for Ollie Watkins. Now, that wasn't the most ridiculous part of it. The most ridiculous part was the headline they went with. This paves the way for a £29 million move. This is despite this being less than what Villa paid for him last season. And after the season he had last year, he's probably doubled in value.
Sounds like good business, this. So we got a player, and while he was with us, he scored a decent amount of goals, broke into the England squad to the extent that he was almost in the Euros. And now we're taking a loss on him.
It's a solid move. I mean, it's, you know,
it's a solid move. I mean, doesn't he fact check? How can he just write such nonsense? I mean, the only connection with Liverpool and the Danny Ings scenario, the signing, was they actually pocketed around £2 million because they had a sell-on clause when they sold him to Southampton in the first place. So a good deal for them, as well as us, ultimately.
Yeah, and then, of course, it had to continue. You had Jermaine Beckford in TalkSport saying that Watkins should be worried that Danny Ings is going to come in and take his position. And he says, if I was a striker, I'd be thinking that I haven't done my job last season, I'm going to be a bench warmer. Well, just because it happened to you, Jermaine, doesn't mean that it's going to happen to Ollie Watkins. I think we might be able to squeeze 2 30-million-plus strikers into the team.
Another team starts to show ambition and pundits start to short-circuit, or ex-players, that can't wrap their brain around the fact that Aston Villa actually have intentions to try to do something rather than just make up the numbers and get patted on the head when we sell one of our, you know, big players to one of the teams that they can understand and they worship. But I think it's good for Watkins that Ings coming in, because it keeps him on his toes. He's starting the season thinking, oh, you know, Grealish is gone. You know what? Oh, shit, what's going on here? He's suddenly, he's not the main man. Well, I mean, we've been playing seasons after seasons with just one striker in the squad. I mean, one proper striker. So I think it's looking good. And right, let's move on to the 3 points. Let's make the snappy headlining stat. I mean, there's... we've lost our top man, but I think it fails in comparison to somebody who's really achieved everything at the top of the game and is Mr. Barcelona. The bizarre thing is they actually came up to an agreement that he would continue and struck a deal that he would continue to play at Barca and see out his career there. I mean, after 21 years, 17 seasons in the first league, he's got like 35 trophies to his name. No surprise, there was a tearful farewell at the press conference. And the stickler is it, what is it? Is it like Spanish fair play, or is it La Liga rules?
Yeah, it's new regulations being brought in by La Liga, because...
So Barcelona's wage to turnover percentage, player wages, this is the limit. So it has to be 70%. I mean, if you go back to the Martin O'Neill days, we were over that. We were at, you know, 80%. So it's currently, without Messi in the team, it's actually at 95%. So 95% of all their outgoings, I mean, you can't run a business like that.
That's just lunacy, isn't it? In any other business in the world, you'd have gone under ages ago.
So if they had signed him, they'd have gone up to 115%. Which means you're on a, you know, you're on a fast track to closure, I think, if that's your business model. But I mean, you, Phil, reckoned there was a potential answer to pay for this, but I'm not convinced, because they, you know, they have to get rid of players, don't they?
Yeah, well, La Liga is the first European league that have had to actually sell a stake in itself as an entity to a private equity firm. CVC Partners bought 10% of it over the next 50 years. So this was going to get a cash injection into all the teams in La Liga, and some for the women's La Liga teams as well. But Barca and Madrid aren't accepting this at the moment. They're still clinging on to the hope of the Super League.
Yeah, because they don't want to give up control. I mean, they've already got like a special TV deal where they get preferential treatment. So the Spanish league's in a bit of flux here. Football's in the mess, but I think that 70% rule should definitely come in the Premier League, surely. Point number two. This is kicking off behind the scenes. I'm privy to being on the Premier League Network, Football Supporters Association Network. The current topic, which is causing a bit of kerfuffle, is the supporter tokens, the socios basically cryptocurrency. Essentially, it's fans getting tokens and being able to buy tokens. It's what the FSA and a lot of fan reps are worrying about, is monetizing fan engagement. And I mean, this season, it's growing and growing and growing. I mean, in Italy, I think Roma, Juventus, Inter Milan are now sponsored by socios on their shirt. The major clubs around the world, like Galatasaray. But Arsenal have just signed up to it. I think Manchester City,
Everton.
And Leeds now are unhappy about them trialing the cryptocurrency. But, I know a little bit about crypto and NFTs, etc. I think what they're concerned about is monetizing fan engagement, which I don't think this is. I mean, this is like lower tier things. Like, you know, if you have fan tokens, you have access to a poll on, you know, pies, or, you know, what flavor pies or whatever. I think that level is kind of fine, really. Or, you know, voting best player awards or whatever. But when it's coming to like real fan engagement that you do, you know, fan consultation groups that the government say that clubs should be meeting with their fans at least, you know, twice a year or whatever the time period is, then this shouldn't have anything to do with that. But I can see how these socios or fan tokens, you know, they integrate into NFTs, and which are increasingly bigger in America. So you'll be able to get collectibles, you know, trading cards or player highlights if it's like video NFTs. And you can see how that evolves. And I think that's something that most football clubs will eventually embrace, because it's just moving with the times. And, you know, there's another level of, without going too deep into it, it's like the next level of the internet. So I think this is one of education. So, I mean, I've just let it roll at the moment in terms of people trying to get the FSA to oppose it. But I think it's more an explanation of what potentially it will do, as opposed to what actually it's not going to be doing, which I think is you're not going to be having Christian Perslow only talking to people who actually own fan tokens at Villa. I don't think that's how that rolls out.
No, it's just another layer. It's interesting, though. It's an interesting world.
Yeah, no, 100%. And they should be looking at how do we get it to work for us, rather than, oh, let's oppose it. Because there are quite a lot of possibilities. And
it's
what
a huge
you can
opportunity
do
as well.
Yeah. Anyway, we will no doubt talk about this more in the future. Meanwhile, point number three, Manchester United are to be renamed on Football Manager following a trademark settlement. Most people don't realise that all these clubs have their name trademarked, and people knocking out merch and stuff. Aston Villa this, Aston Villa that. The club can just shoot you down at any opportunity. You shouldn't really be doing it. You shouldn't be putting players' images on either, because they're pretty much all copyrighted. But Sega and Sports Interactive have come to a resolution. I mean, it was a case of they weren't going to pay to use the badge, but they were using a mock-up badge, but the name still, and Manchester United say either you pay for it all or get lost. Is that the upshot?
Essentially, yeah. They were. Manu's argument was that they were being misrepresented. You know, it's like, if you're going to represent our brand name, you have to have the brand logo as well. But I'm guessing they didn't want to pay for what is probably one of the most expensive brand logos you're going to have in sport. You know, Sega obviously came back and said, well, you've been represented this way since 1992, since the inception of the game. So why all of a sudden is this a problem? We've obviously come to an agreement where they won't use the badge.
So what do they call now when they play West Midlands Village?
It will be, they have the choice. It'll either be Manchester UFC, which is a bit bizarre, or Man UFC. I'm sure Conor McGregor et al. Will have something to say about that as well.
It sums football up 100%.
Yeah, it's just a load of shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Frankly. Yeah. It just makes you put your head in your hands and go, oh, for fuck's sake. Right, anyway, let's move on to the main bit. How do Villa improve on the 2021 season? Now, instead of having Mr. Jack Grealish not playing for a third of the season, he's now not playing for the whole of the season. Could be a blessing in disguise. We shall find out. First of all, what's your concerns for next season? I mean, my one right off the bat is all this kind of it's almost like a last-minute shake-up, isn't it? Grealish out.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, we need two more weeks of pre-season minimum.
Yeah, at least another week and a game, for
Louise
sure.
Louise is over the other side, the world winning gold medals, which we forgot to mention in the news there. Douglas Luiz is our
congratulations to him, by the way.
Is our Olympian, our golden Olympian. Yeah. So he hasn't come back. He must be having some kind of break, but you can't have too much of a break because he's got to be pretty much match fit when he comes back. So I don't know what the story is there. We'll find out in Dean Smith's first press conference before the Watford game. You've obviously got Bailey. I don't know what the hell's happening there. Buendia, not super fit yet.
He's been carrying a knock, hasn't he, for about, is it a couple of weeks now?
Sanson's still kind of light training, doesn't seem to be featuring in any of the friendlies.
Traore's only just come back. And as you know, Mings, Martinez, etc. It's their first minutes back.
So, yeah. I mean, I think you said in Match Club, Chris, that you know other teams are having the similar problems. So I suppose you could argue it irons itself out. But then again, not everybody's lost their captain and then hastily, you know, replaced him. And, you know, you're in a position where Smith is kind of reinventing the way we're going to play. I mean, you know, in that friendly on Sunday, you know, we're suddenly seeing 4-4-2. We're going, whoa, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, that was a bit of a, I think that actually threw everyone, didn't it? Unless it was just a, let's just trial it and see how we get on. And then they changed it, didn't they, after when Watkins sort of walked off with a little niggle.
Yeah. But it, you know, it could be like, right, let's just give both of them, you know, minutes in the bank.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, well, why not? Let's, you know, give it a little try just so it's...
Shits and giggles and all that?
No, it's just so it's actually an option up our sleeve if we need it. Because, come on, if you've got 230 million strikers, you want to play them, so...
In terms of lack of preseason, I've said it for a couple of weeks now. I do think we're undercooked, although I think a lot of other teams are. But frankly, I don't give a shit about the other teams in terms of us. I think it will take us a few games, or it could take us a while to just... you know, mould the new lads in, which would take time anyway, but get, you know, the regulars up to the levels, you know, when you've got your goalkeeper and your back four who were so good for most of last season, you kind of want to hope that they are ready to rock and roll from the word go.
Because I think even with, if Grealish was still there, he's still, he would have only just come back this week anyway. So there's that. Another concern of mine would be you've certainly lost a little bit of gravitas in terms of Terry and Grealish. I don't know how that will manifest itself. We seem to have managed to get signings in, no problem. Maybe it might drop us down an echelon in the media in the immediate term. Yeah. But I don't mind that. I mean, we'll talk about that.
I like being under the radar.
Yeah. Phil, any concerns?
No, it's just when you replace Grealish and the three players that have been brought in specifically to replace Grealish, they don't seem to be, you know, like shrinking violets or nothing like that there. There's three big personalities. I mean, Danny Ings is coming in with a reputation. Bailey's got a reputation in world football, and Buendia as well looks like he's all about himself. So it's how do you fit those three personalities into not only the team but into the dressing room as well?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mm-hmm. Right, so let's get into how we improve. What has been the fundamental thing of the last couple of years from Project Restart onwards has been the backbone that our defence has created now, and that includes Martinez. And when you look at 15 clean sheets last season, which I mean clean sheets aren't the be all and end all of defending, because, you know, if you're giving away loads of shots, which I think we did, you're obviously walking a tightrope there, but you know, we've got two centre backs who love to block and a very good goalkeeper. So you could say we're chancing our luck, but I don't know. I'm seeing a more comfortable Villa now. I mean, remember how edgy we used to get with 5 minutes to go if we're in the league? We were almost expected to concede, but now you feel like you can, you know, we can close games out because the defence is that good. But Martinez, let's start with him. Last season, he was a goalkeeper who wanted to prove himself as a number one. He was like a backup international keeper. He now starts this season as Argentina's number one. Not only that, Copa America winner. Somebody that Messi is thankful for giving him that trophy.
Yeah, we've created a monster, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, you saw him in that penalty shootout against Colombia. This is a man who will give us edge. If we get into those situations, if we go to penalties against anybody in a cup, for in a semi, in a final, whatever, here's somebody, he's major. I mean, this is, I think he's probably one of our, probably our biggest player in terms of leading by example on the pitch. So that's a massive plus. And I think the confidence that he's got, the kind of where that positions him in the pecking order in terms of the squad and the team. It's just, oh, Mings, runner up. Yeah, never mind, mate. I'm a winner. He would have been able to say that to Grealish as well. So that's massive, I think. That's a massive plus.
I think it's just good to have someone with that. You know, when you lose Jack, who has become a sort of a player with a global reputation, it's good that Martinez has also emerged globally and everyone looks at him going, wow, yeah, Villa have got a really good keeper. He's not like a bona fide star player, which is great. We haven't had one of our best players being in goal probably since Bosnic, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, when I was younger, Villa always had it from Rimmer, Spinks onwards. That was one position that was always reasonably decent. Then it's been a bit of a mixed bag, let's say recently, until Martinez came into town. I mean, even Heaton came along, got injured straight away. I mean, you go to the back four. I mean, the good thing about last season was the emerge. We signed a proper right back, and the left back completely transformed into a defensive beast, which was probably his weakest suit. We always thought, yeah, Target, he's all right going forward. He will develop more as a wing back, probably. We're just a bit concerned about him defensively, but defensively I thought he was excellent last season, our most improved player, I think we called him. So the good thing, I think we've upgraded in terms of cover for those guys.
I think so. I mean, it's great. Long may their improvement continue. I think having Courtney Hawes and keeping him fit in and around the squad is a good backup for them. I think having Twan Zabi gives us more flexibility because he's probably a better ball player than Hawes. I think he's good in the air. We saw in the promotion run, etc. I think he's got a lot of sort of the physical attributes you'd want as well. And I think he gives you that little bit of versatility in terms of if you need to play a back three, or he can play at right back, or if he needs to play midfield.
Yeah, we're talking about the fullback. So.
And of course, Ashley Young as well. And Gilbert.
Young would be probably my first backup on the left. And then at the moment, you'd probably say Gilbert, but you've got, we were playing with Konsa a bit. So that's an option. But also Tuan Zabi gives you that option.
Yeah. And Young can play right back, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then obviously we've got, I would say, one of the better centre-back pairings at the moment in Mings and Konsa. And if Konsa continues his progression, I think you'll see him knocking on the door in the England squad.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. But we're seeing now Mings, a man who seemed to, going into that Euros, suffered, reading between the lines of what he's been saying in the press, I think it was a little bit of imposter syndrome, I think, which essentially is when you get in a position, it could be anything, could be a musician, could be a, journalist, and you feel like you don't deserve to be there. Like, what am I doing? I just came from a small town and now I'm at the top of your game.
Yeah.
So I think a little bit of that, but the fact that he's played in a major championship, two starts straight away, did very well. I think that he is now, he will have a lot more self-confidence now going into this season. And, let's not forget, he hasn't, despite his age and he's not that old, but he hasn't played, he has missed a couple of seasons, probably collectively through injuries. But everybody we've mentioned there, now we've got two Nzebi back. I mean, you need a quartet of centre-backs, I think, if you're going in the season, just to cover all eventualities. And I think with two Nzebi, we have that flexibility to play a three centre-back, a Southgate three at the back.
You can if we need to.
And I only mentioned it because it allows you to play with Ings and Watkins up front and potentially Buendia behind them, because it gives you Target and Cash, who are both good going forward as your wing backs, then you can play your McGinn and Nakamba, and then ahead of them in a triangle, Buendia, play with Watkins and Ings up front. And then obviously, you know, that your width is coming from your wing backs. So definitely an option there, because all our defenders now are reasonably decent on the ball.
Yeah. And that's important, I think, from the way Villa want to play. One of the things I noticed in the open training was that the goalkeepers were, when they were doing their catching drills, they were very, very fast to get the ball out. That was obviously something that they've been working on. They want to get on the front foot quickly, whether it's because they want to counter-attack, I don't know. I'm sure we'll see over the next few weeks how Villa, you know, how they actually implement their plan. But it was a very obvious thing that Martinez and Steer were grabbing the ball and it was going. They were hitting the corners, you know, obviously going out towards the wide lads and putting it in behind what would be the opposition's fullbacks.
Yeah. In terms of other improvements, I think, I mean, let's talk about the obvious one. But we're in the way that Persley's framed it, by replacing Grealish in the aggregate. And I mean, there seemed to be a bit of, it was almost like the way that this was being spoken about on social media was like, we've replaced him with three players. And the way that we were talking about it, it's like, well, who else are we going to get in? Who? And it's like, we're not playing with 13 players on the pitch now. What that means is one of them is going to replace him on the team sheet, but we've upgraded two other positions to compensate for, you know, what he brings to the party. Now, I think I prefer replacing him with three players, A, because if you compare how important Ings was to Southampton to how Grealish was to Villa, I think you could arguably say Ings was more valuable overall.
In terms of like the tangible stats, yeah.
Yeah, which is goals. And so if you got him in, that's like, wow. And you saw a change in mood when Ings' transfer announced. That took most of the sting out. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's not going to take it all, but
it was like the cloud lifted.
It was a big statement, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, there's only Salah, Kane. Who else has scored more goals than him in two seasons? Or is that it? The last two seasons?
I think that might be it. But I'd imagine Mane's probably up there. But I mean, I said in our
but he's playing for Southampton. He's not playing for you know, these big teams that
and he doesn't get the same service. I mean, Ings is absolutely clinical, isn't he, in front of goal? Yeah. I said it before. I think we've purchased the second best finisher. I think there might be better all round strikers, but I think Kane is probably the best finisher. But I think Ings is number two because he doesn't get the service that a Salah or a Mane or you can insert plenty of other strikers. But you give him chances and he scores.
And I like the fact he's kind of an all-round goal scorer. He can score from outside the box, you know, inside the box. He's just got a shot. He knows what he's doing.
And I think because of, he's a little bit older and wiser, and he knows the country. You know, Smith talked about it last season. They've brought in someone who they can slot in, and I think he'll settle quite quickly.
You just saw the stature of the signing, because only that week there was reports that, Man City, Spurs, everybody else, these are the teams that should
Chelsea,
be signing.
Chelsea, yeah.
Chelsea should be signing Danny Ings because, you know, it's a guaranteed thing. It's a sure thing. And then all of a sudden Villa just take him. So that has, I think that is, it's maybe one of the dominoes that have sort of started the transfer market off, because Villa have taken a lot of teams sort of like fallback option in Danny Ings. They were all chasing these big targets thinking, it's okay, we'll pick up Ings if we don't get anything better. But Villa have just went in there and said, no, he's for us. So that's another reason why he came to us so willingly.
Yeah. There was an article in The Guardian that was essentially trying to sell Ings to Chelsea or Manchester City. And then 3 hours later, he was a Villa player. That improves our attack. I mean, I was Bailey. I think you're going to get something dynamic there. I think the underlining question mark is consistency. Is he going to be another one of these purple patch wingers where we see great things, you know, during certain games, but then, you know, you can go a few games where he's kind of off colour, as we've been saying about Trezeguet, El Ghazi, Traore. Hopefully he's something a bit more of a constant threat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think the big one for me with him will be how fast can he settle. You know, he's been in Germany, so in terms of like the culture won't be that much of a shock, but it's still, you know, a very different league, tactically possibly quite different. Although I'm sure Phil said before in our last show that Leverkusen actually playing quite a similar way to Villa. So I'm hoping that he'll get our style of play.
But, you know, where's he starting? Is he the one who's actually starting in Grealish's position out there on the side? Or does he plays right though, doesn't he?
He kind of plays on the right and cuts inside, so it's almost like he's direct competition for Traore. It's going to be a really interesting sort of month to 6 weeks to see where the hell they actually play these guys.
Yeah, because I've, you know, people are saying Buendia starting on the right, but that's where Bailey's meant to be. But I saw Buendia in the middle, and they've got a situation because I was thinking Buendia was going to play up behind, you know, in like a 10 off the front striker, but then suddenly Ings came into town, and you're thinking, well, you're not going to leave Ings on the bench at any point of the discussion because you know he's deadly.
Especially, you know, all these guys we brought in. Ings is the most proven at Premier League level. Buendia, I mean, there's nothing to suggest he can't do it. You know, bearing in mind, last year we brought a couple of the really good players from the Championship in Watkins and Cash, and they stepped up comfortably. But it's a different kind of role, and he's going to have to take on a lot more of the workload, I think, with the ball than maybe someone like an Ings or a Bailey.
But a couple of seasons before, I mean, he was impressive. Buendia in the Premier League,
team.
in a terrible yep. team. So if he can improve on what he did with Norwich, which I think he created that partnership of him and Pookie created more chances than anybody across the season, I think.
Yeah, if you can get Buendia behind Ings and Watkins, these two players to pick from, and you would bet either of them that are, you know, they're going to finish and chance to get.
Yeah, you give those two service and they are going to score goals, aren't they? We've seen that.
Yeah, so that is the big conundrum is where are these players playing across the midfield and the wide midfield positions, to be precise. I mean, you saw when we were playing that 4-4-2 week that McGinn was playing deep and Nakamba was playing deep. So that was almost like, you know, those were the two centre midfielders in a 4-4-2 setup.
Yeah, and they both look quite comfortable there as well.
Yeah, which begs me to suggest that, I mean, you know, I put this out on Twitter that, you know, just to dampen expectations, I don't think that we're going to be spending big. I don't think there's that much to come.
No, because, I mean, if you are going to sign players, I mean, the links have been Ward-Prowse and players like that, but does that mean you're just going to give up on Douglas Luiz? I mean, this time last year, people were terrified that City were going to execute their buyback clause on him. Are you just going to give up on Sanson that we haven't even seen yet?
And Marvellous, who's shown a lot of improvement through the season. Yeah. And he put in some big performances. I'm a big fan of, you know, getting the most out of what you've got. And I think Smith has come from Brentford where he's had to do that. I don't think that this sort of the default setting for modern fans is, you know, if someone has a bad game, oh, we need to go and buy someone new all the time. Well, doesn't work like that. You've got to get the best out of your team.
And that leads me into another thing that will improve. A lot of these guys that we brought who were, you know, 20, 22, 23, 24, again, have another years of experience. And this is experience that's actually making them better players. It's not just, you know, when you go from 27 to 28 or 28 to 29.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about we bought them because they are like very talented players at that age, and they have a lot of upside on the pitch and hopefully financially as well. So I think Luiz is going to get better. You know, he's had a good experience in the Olympics. I think Nakamba's going to get better. And Sanson, you don't go out and buy a player. And let's not forget they've bought him ahead of schedule. So they were going to buy him in this summer.
And spend a lot more on him as well. Now they got him when they did because they could get him cheap. So they clearly rate him.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think we've seen, well, I'm touching wood here. Hopefully we haven't seen the best of him yet. So I can't see, you know, I can't see us running out and spending loads of money.
No, because another thing is if you start filling the team with all these superstars, where's your Chukwuemeka is going to play? Where's your Philogene Bittis going to play? Their route into the first team is going to be blocked. And
that, you know, seems to be an important part of the plan. You know, they do want to get behind youth development. And we've seen what Chukwuemeka can do in little bursts. And he looks like he's the real deal. We hope he is.
So it makes no sense for Villa, how they've set up all that investment in the youth team. I mean, you know, paying very good money for some of the more talented 16 to 18 year olds in European football. That is a big part of getting players through. Then suddenly you've personally pretty much confirmed that 100 mil is pretty much been spent on those three players, Buendia, Bailey, Ings. Now, the reason why I think Grealish would have been done a lot earlier, but, you know, they've got to sell season tickets. If you took Grealish, they sold Grealish before the big, you know, the big season ticket sale, then you're going to get a lot of people pissed off. Back in the day, you get two or three marquee signings, you get them in early, hold up the shirt, and that inspires people, that inspires season ticket sales. The big thing they had at the moment was, we're keeping Jack Grealish, fuck you guys. And he's just had a great, in terms of his profile, England tournament. So that's the main thing that people are skipping to Villa Park. And if you got rid of him early, it's like you're going to get a lot of pissed off punters. So they dragged that out. And Perslow pretty much admitted that that money has been, you know, they earmarked three players in their plan to replace Grealish if the day had come. And those were the three players that he earmarked. So is he going to get another three players for 100 million? I don't think so.
No.
And also, I think they'd want to allow themselves a little bit of wiggle room to maybe, because you don't know what's going to happen through the season, to be able to be flexible in January if you need to go and get something.
Yeah, I mean, where did these players play? Because goalkeeper back four, that doesn't need improving. That's good. We're selling with that. We've got the backups in play with your Ashley Youngs, your two and Zabies. They've come in to sort that out. So defence all round. Could argue if an opportunity pops up with an experienced keeper, you'd get him in. But you can kind of see them trusting in Jed Steer to be number two. And then, you know, if anything happens and there's a goalkeeper crisis, then you've got the January window. I think that's probably how they're looking at that one.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to waste any more money on goalkeepers after the last few seasons. You go up front, you'd want to be playing Ings, you want to be playing Watkins, you probably want to be starting Bailey because he'll get pissed off. And, you just got Buendia in, so they're starting. So that leaves two places for Traore, McGinn, Nakamba, Louise, El Ghazi.
Sanson.
So do you really need to get other players in? Do you think, not do you need, because we all want to get the best players in the world, but do you think Aston Villa at this stage will, and they've got to register 25 players, haven't they?
Yeah, I think we're about, after Twanzebe coming in, we'll look to be at about 24.
Yeah, we're in the zone now of if an opportunity comes along, because I think we've got the squad in their eyes. I'm not talking about my opinion or my eyes. I'm just giving you my opinion of what I think Villa are thinking at the moment. And I think, you know, suddenly you look at our striking options now. There could be some outs, and I think the kind of players that you're looking at are could be deadline day things, like, you know, Conor Hourihan, who Villa wanted to actually keep before he went out to Swansea. That was him forcing an issue there. He might back himself to get one of those two places I've just mentioned. Now, Wesley, I would like to keep Wesley in, because I can't see how we get rid of Wesley now and see any money really coming back for a striker who hasn't played for 1.5 seasons.
Well, he holds no value, does he, at the moment?
I'd have him on the bench, bring him on. And I think, wow, suddenly Villa have got three strikers, four if you include Davis, but he was going to go out on loan, so let's say three, and we've been playing seasons with one.
Yeah, and you don't know if Wesley and Ings might be a link up. You just don't know how these players play. I mean, Ings might be the key to unlocking Wesley. You just don't know what'll happen.
Yeah, so I would have him just because you've paid 20 million, and obviously it's Ings and Watkins, but I think Wesley wins back his value by doing stuff for Villa, because the only route out is like loaning him to some, you know, like back to the Belgium league and giving him some real low ball option to buy figure and just write it off.
One of the more interesting incomings, though, over the summer, I thought, was the appointment of Austin McPhee. You know, we mowed regularly on the pod last season about our lack of quality at set pieces. All of a sudden, they've gone and bought themselves a set piece specialist, which is not something I've heard of a Villa having before. I'm sure there are, other places have had it. You know, he's come from Hearts as an assistant and now works with Phil's Northern Ireland. I'm really interested to see what, over the next few weeks and months, what he brings, and in terms of if he can actually refine Villa's, you know, playing both penalty areas at set pieces, because that's kind of actually where we were conceding a lot of bad goals.
Yeah.
And where we weren't scoring enough, considering we've actually got, you know, Konsa and Mings, who are both really good in the air.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because in Smith's interview, he spoke about why he brought him in, and he also highlighted throw-ins as a big thing going forward that they're going to look to capitalise on. And I think you said, Chris, in Match Club about Craig Shakespeare instructing the crowd.
Yeah, so at the opening training, he sort of said, when he was almost like briefing the crowd what they were going to be doing, and then he said, when we have an open game, when the ball goes out, I want you to kind of get after the players to get the ball back in quickly. So I do wonder if the whole sort of ethos behind Villa this season is tempo, because when we saw Villa last season at their best, they did play at tempo. And even in the friendly, when Villa move the ball quickly and just play with dynamism, they do look a very good side. So I do wonder if that's something they're going to have to, maybe even try and get creative at set pieces. I mean, we'll see. I'm really intrigued what they actually mean by that.
In terms of the throw-ins, they sounds like they're going to be briefing the ball boys to get that ball in quick.
I mean, John Terry did that, didn't he? I remember very vividly in the Watford game, the year we stayed up. I remember when, I think it was Ben Foster, it would have been in goal for Watford that night. He was pissing around.
Yeah.
Wasting time. And I remember Terry collared one of the ball boys by the dugout, and he got the ball boy to run around each of the Holt End ball boys and said, get it back. And literally the kids were virtually running on the pitch,
yeah,
putting the ball on the spot for what for Foster. It was really interesting to see.
What I'll say about Mufi is he's got experience for Northern Ireland. He's been involved in over 70 games on the bench for Northern Ireland because he was with Michael O'Neill. He went to the Euros, the previous Euros, and now he's helping Barraclough, who's the manager at the minute. He is continuing that job. And we don't concede, as a country, we don't concede a lot of goals from set pieces. That's probably the only way we're ever going to score as well. So do notice on the
John McGinn described him as the best in the business when it comes to analysis and work with set play. So I'm interested. I am really interested to see how that sort of transpires over the next few weeks.
Going back to the Northern Ireland thing, I can see exactly why he's there, because those are the margins that Northern Ireland have got to seek their advantages from. Yeah. Because, you know, in open play, perhaps not the most talented in terms of when you're matched up against the likes of France, Italy, or whoever. So that's kind of interesting that it's a good background to have I suppose he's working on a lot of analytics and whatever for Northern Ireland in terms of maximizing and knowing what's the most effective approach in terms of different situations with set pieces.
Yeah, and he does seem to be the ear for the manager Northern Ireland to sort of like run things past. He's very involved in the bench. They're always a word in his ear and things like that there to see what's going on. So hopefully he'll add to the Greek course.
Yeah, Smith had said in his interview, didn't he, in terms of the Terry departure, that they were looking to streamline the operation as well. So I wonder if that's part of it in terms of we'll take the best bits of Terry and get someone in for the actual specifics we need. You've got Shakespeare and Smith who were, you know, very good operators. I think they're reasonably well stocked. I think it's potentially a very shrewd move.
We'll keep an eye on that in terms of the advantages we gain there. I mean, it was quite funny when we were watching the last preseason game and we're lining up 4-4-2, and then you got Maddie Cash with the ball under his shirt getting ready for the long throw. You're thinking, oh no, what have we turned into here?
It's back to the 90s.
We're playing like Stoke now.
He's got a bloody good throw though, ain't he, Matty Cash? You never really realised it before.
Yeah.
He's got a rocket of a throwing arm.
I think that on pitch experiences, now you've got Martinez, Mings, who are like senior in terms of, you know, the international pedigree now. And you've got your Ings and Young. I think you said, Chris, that you've actually got senior players that are on the pitch and not just in the dressing room like Heaton and Taylor were.
Yeah, you need your experience and that sort of bit of know-how, don't you? You said in the last pod with someone like Young, it's these guys who can get you over the line in the difficult moments, or, you know, guys who've been there and done it like Young. Or even who can, you know, Young has a previous of popping up with moments of quality. Even, you know, to go back to what we were just talking about, things like set pieces. You know, we've got options now rather than like, oh shit, who's going to take a corner or a free kick?
In that third of the season where Grealish wasn't there, you're kind of losing, I don't know, identity or direction or whatever. But I think we've now got the players who in Ings, Bailey is going to give you something. I think another way we improve, I think Traore will be better. And I think he you know, he's a very interesting player in a wild card kind of way last season. He's not somebody you just write off. He's definitely going to be involved and he makes things happen. So I think he'll grow in confidence. And if he has a better season than he did have this season, I think that's will say a lot about us going in a more improved direction than last.
Yeah, and I think with the players we've got the potential to be quite good fun to watch again. You know, the first half of last season, I thought we were great to watch. We were really box office at times. And I think, you know, people like Bailey, and if Traore comes to the party and all these guys, even if someone like an El Ghazi can continue his improvement, we've got guys who should be, you know, exciting and dynamic and, you know, fun for the crowd to watch. You know, we've obviously been away for such a long time that ultimately you want to be entertained.
Yeah, but, you know, as we said, it might be a patience thing for supporters they're still, as a team, recovering from the Grealish thing, so they're going to have to get that self-confidence in them. But the good thing is we've got a solid back four and keeper and a deadly striker in Ings. In the meantime, while we find our feet and these other players find their position, at least we've got the basic equation to keep going forward, as in we'll be, you know, hard to score against, but we'll also, even if we only have a few chances, that Ings is going to stick one or two away.
Yeah, well, he was one of the top two for shot conversion. Him and Lacazette, they were both their non-penalty shot conversion. They scored like 21.2% and Lacazette was 21.3%. So one of them, five shots is a goal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have said Ings is injury prone, which obviously is something you is a concern. Obviously, they've done their due diligence because you don't drop 30 million on anybody. But also in the last two seasons, compared to, let's just compare him to Grealish, he's actually played five more games than Grealish has over the last two seasons. And one of those seasons, he played every game, 38 games, which not many players actually manage if you're not a goalkeeper. So that was a good sign when I saw he managed to pull that off. I think he had a couple of niggles last season, though. Right, I think that's it, isn't it, in terms of... I think we need to see this our first 11 in action, and I don't know how many weeks it's going to take to actually see with all these players returning to the UK in the next week or so. Just before we go, I just want to say a massive thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons who keep us tracking on into... another season. If you join to support the show as a My Old Man Said patron, you get access to Match Club, where I think this season coming now, fans are back in stadiums. I think we'll still be meeting up for away games because the majority of us will still be around. We'll evolve something for the home games. But it's a great group, and it's certainly an escape to the madness and the pointlessness of Twitter at times, or the inanity of Twitter. And also, we will be getting a schedule up and running for the My Old Man Said patron podcast channel with the extra podcasts, which we've kind of been sorting out behind the scenes. And it's hard because it's all time. Trying to make them regular so everybody knows exactly when in the month they will drop. And it's not just football. It's not just football. So please do go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the Patreon link. And a huge, huge thanks to the merry men that signed up in the past week. Jim Mananen, Tony Bridgeton, Carl Taylor, and also a massive thanks for the annual subscribers as well. If you sign up annually, you do get 2 months off free, which equates to about 15%. Big, big thanks to Down Under, Ian Wiseman for supporting the show once again, and Andrew Tees and Paul Sylvester. So as I said, myoldmansaid.com, check out the Patreon link and do support the show so we can get bigger and better in the new season. Meanwhile, spread the word. If you see the show link on Twitter, please do give it a retweet and spread it on social media, etc. And follow the show on whatever podcast app you listen to it on. So we're a week away. We're less than a week away. So that just leaves me to very quickly ask you gentlemen, where are we finishing this season?
8th.
I was going to say the same. I was going to go, 8th or 9th.
So 8th.
Yeah.
What about you?
I did an interview with BT Sports.
Oh, this was your very ambitious one, wasn't it?
Before all the shit went down and Grealish left, and I said 5th, just because I like to be bullish, you know, at the start of the season. So I went bullish 5th, and then all the shit went down. I thought, yeah, and I sent him an email. I said, oh, can you downgrade that to a 7th? Because I'm just thinking that early season patch of these players coming out of the colds, just signing in, the team needing to believe in itself, realizing what they're actually capable of, and, you know, believing that they can be.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Banging on the door at the top there. I mean, you look on paper, it's definitely there, but we need to see it in practice to see how we're going. But we've got to finish top 8 for sure this season in terms of progression, or else the heat's going to be turned up on both the manager and
the project, as it were.
There might be a little bit of disillusionment creeping in, because what has held us back, I mean, the whole Grealish thing, even the team and supporters have always had it as an excuse if he's injured. Now it's not an excuse anymore, so we need to change mindset. But hopefully the team can lead, certainly before Christmas, lead us in creating that mindset on the pitch with some decent results, and we'll kick on from there. So thank you very much for listening, everybody out there, and you gents for joining me on another show. Any final words?
Bring it on now.
Bring it on.
You know, it's been quite a bizarre, eventful summer, and let's just get back down to business.
And we'll see you all there. Not everybody. I'll
bring on the Geordies in a couple of weeks at Villa Park.
Yeah, we'll see you at Villa Park. Back live.
It'd be a great occasion, that.
And yeah, I think it will have the crackle of that Everton game.
That was a great night. That was one of my favourite games at Villa Park in a long time.
For a run-of-the-mill league game, that atmosphere was on another level. And you just thought, shit, is this how it's going to be every game for the rest of the season? You know, bring it on. But it never reached that level again, did it?
We had little moments, didn't we? But we were quite inconsistent, really. And I suppose because of where we were in the league, it was proper. It was obviously a Friday night. It was sunny. It was warm. We played really well. It was just a great occasion.
Yeah. Right. On that note, look forward to it. More great occasions at Villa Park this season. And it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And one last word on Jack Grealish.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.